This is Red 42 Radio, the most exciting, hard-hitting, and controversial hour in talk radio. And here are your hosts, two Southern boys from metropolitan New York City, Peter Scoop Stanton and Jim Lancia.
The police in New York City chased a boy right through the park. In a case of mistaken identity, they put a bullet through his heart.
And hello, everybody. This is Peter Scoop Stanton. This is Red 42 with Jim Lancia. We have a special guest on the horn. He is a former reporter, journalist. He's appeared on a whole bunch of programs, including The Political Cesspool, The Anthony Nakumia Show, Alex Jones Show. He's also an author of Don't Make the Black Kids Angry and White Girl Bleeds a Lot. And on top of that, he's appeared on YouTube, which he recently got kicked off at, and he's currently on Minds.com. Ladies and gentlemen, yours truly, along with Jim Lancia, is proud to introduce our guest, Colin Flattery. How you doing, sir?
Happy to be here.
Outstanding. Jim, you online with us?
Yeah, I'm on the line. Hey, Colin, what's up? How you doing?
Hey, Jim.
All right. Me and Colin have a little history together. I made his acquaintance several years back. He was very instrumental in helping me get my book out, Downtown White Police. And it was an honor for me to talk to an author and a journalist with his renown. And he helped me out a lot with that. And I've been following his work ever since. You do a lot of good work, Colin, and you're spreading the word. It's the kind of thing that people don't want to talk about for some reason, and it's getting people hurt and killed. So what do you think, Colin? Where are we right now with these relations with black-on-white violence?
I was so happy when I heard you were right when we talked on the phone, because to me, cops are the only ones in this country who really know what's happening, except most are not in a position to tell us this enormous level of black on white, black on young, black on old, black on gay, black on straight, black on kitties, puppies, and turtle violence, so wildly out of proportion. How so many reporters are in denial, deceit, and delusion about it. And so, So every day that's what we do. I tell stories about just examples of this. So every day, so where we are, the answer to the question is there's an enormous amount of black and white hostility out there. A lot of times it gets manifest in violence. When people brush the violence off, they brush the robbery off, they just brush it off as, well, either it's not happening or white people do it too, or white people deserve it. And there's just a ton of ton of recent examples of this.
Right. And we also have tons of statistics, and, they come from the FBI themselves. The statistics don't really lie. They may actually not even be as accurate as they could be, because we know that it's even worse than the statistics show. And like you were saying, people don't want to talk about it for some reason. And it doesn't make people racist to talk about a problem, an epidemic, you know, because this goes both ways. Let's stick with black violence right now, because that's the prevalent violence in this country. It's affecting black people. It's affecting Asians. Like you said, it's affecting Hispanics. It's affecting whites. But for some reason, when everybody could talk about black on black violence, it's not a problem. It's like, okay, yeah, we got to try to do something about it. But if you go and talk about black on white violence, there's a problem with it for some reason, and people got to get over that.
Look, black violence and criminality is wildly out of proportion, except for the last couple of years. This is why I wrote my books. People have been telling me, no, it's not black violence is not the problem. It's white racism that's the problem, Colin. Why don't you and Jim understand that? And so my books are a pushback against that. We tell the truth. We document this enormous level of black criminality. And like it's like whether it's black and black and white, black and gay, black and straight, black and Asian, I don't care. It's wildly out of proportion. Except that's not what we're hearing on television. We're hearing that it's not black people are really the victims of a crime, and that crime is white racism. And if by chance black people break into a car or break into a house or kill somebody, well, hey, wouldn't you after 400, 4,000, 4 million years of repression? We see this every day, this attitude that black people are really the victims.
Yeah, that's wildly ridiculous, and we got to hear that constantly. Now, I'm going to make two more points here. Then, Pete, if you want to say something, I'll let you chime in here. But you said about cops. You're right. There are so many cops, retired and active, that really want to tell the truth, but they will be crucified for doing it, even when it's absolutely the truth. And a lot of them are just afraid to speak out. Now, I'm very outspoken about it, and I'm getting a lot of I get a lot of respect from active duty cops. I talk to them all the time, and I understand that they just can't come out because they're going to be attacked for it, you know, on the job, and it could mean their jobs. But that type of silence is very dangerous. But that's why I feel that I need to speak out as a former cop, because I've lived it. I grew up in it. I went to school with it. And the stuff that I saw as a cop, you know, it gives me some credibility. And one more point, even with journalists, like we have a correspondent who comes on this show a lot. He used to be a Fox correspondent. He comes on the political cesspool also, Sean Bergen, great guy from New York. And he was actually, you know, lost his job with Fox News because he just mentioned after a cop killed
Jim, it was News 12 Long Island. It was News 12.
News 12 Long Island. Right. Pete, you want to talk about that one and what happened to him after he just spoke the truth?
Right. What happened was a young officer, his name was Melvin Santiago.
Remember, Pete, you remember the actual video, what it looks like?
Yes.
Pete, you remember the actual video of Sean Bergen?
Yes, I do.
Okay, good. Okay,
and what? Yeah, in fact, I still watch it on YouTube once in a while, just to, you know, keep memory fresh. What happened was in Jersey City, New Jersey, Officer Melvin Santiago was responding to a call, a man with a gun. Some absolute degenerate took a .45 caliber semi-automatic pistol from a security guard who was well beyond his years and said he was going to go shoot some cops. So Officer Santiago is the first one on the scene. This dirtbag shot at Santiago, killed Santiago. Fortunately, Jersey City's fine and shot back and killed this dirtbag. And the people in the neighborhoods put a memorial for the guy, for the cop killer. His crazy wife said, "Oh, I feel sorry for the cop family, but I wish my husband took out more cops." And the way the story ran on News 12 in New Jersey, it looked like the News 12 was promoting the cop killer, and they were getting some bad calls from the Jersey's finest. And we're headed to a break right now. This is Scoop Stan, Jim Lancet, and Colin Flattery. I'll finish the Sean Bergen story on the other side of this break. This is Red 42.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
We fought, we learned, we struggled,
we won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
We're back with Red 42. Here's Scoop Stanton and Jim Lancia.
Okay, we're back on Red 42. This is Scoop Stanton with Jim Lancia and our very special guest, Colin Flatterly. And we're talking about Schomburger. Real quick, Schomburger reported about a cop killing. The first report looked like they were praising the cop killer and got some nasty telephone calls. Sean decided to run the story the next hour and put commentary at the end, taking a huge risk. And he said the reason why there's a lack of respect for law enforcement in the black community because there's a lack of fathers and the media refuses to talk about it. And then he was subsequently let go from News 12. Colin, Jim, your thoughts?
Yeah, Colin, what do you think about that?
Sean was – no, I did a big chapter on that, and Don't Make the Black Kids Angry. I remember that video very well. And, you know, first of all, that was an ambush killing, right? Second of all, Sean gets on there, and after the report, he gets on there and left loose. He says, this is BS. This hostility towards cops among black people is BS. Went on for like 2 minutes, and I was cheering him on. Pretty soon, he was out looking for another job. So, you know what? If anybody in Long Island, you know, you find your cops are not quite as responsive as they were before, well, now you know why.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, too. You get in trouble for telling the truth. Now, I want to talk about why, maybe if you want to talk about why they shut your YouTube channel down, but it's like anything else. You even talk about it, Colin, de-policing. Crime is going to go up because cops are going to say, well, why should we get involved? Every time we get involved in black violence in the black neighborhoods, they're going to come down on us, whether no matter what we do, right or wrong. It's going to be the same thing. So they back off. Everybody suffers because of that. You know, Colin?
That's a fact. And I tell you, the first time I ever heard that word, de-policing, was from a Chicago cop. He heard it, and he had just heard it that morning in his, you know, when the cops get together and the sergeant tells them what's up. He said, well, we're just going to de-police that neighborhood. What? So, you know, it is what it is. The people like Chicago, places like Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore, hundreds and hundreds of other cities in this country where black on white hostility, where black on cop hostility, where hostility towards cop is now institutionalized. I don't know why people would live there. I just don't.
Yeah, it's also something I touch upon too. You know, this black and white thing is happening even in interpolice departmental. Now we won't talk about that here, but black, you know, I'm not saying all black cops, but they have their black police unions. They have their advocacy groups with lawyers, and they show the same hostility sometimes even in the police department.
I talk about that and don't make the black kids angry. And Chicago cops are saying there's the same divide you see in the city, you see on the police department. Black cops are sometimes not siding with their white partners. They're siding with the criminals, not their partners. They're letting cutting too much slack to the criminals, the perpetrators, all because they're down with the cause. Big, you know, this isn't 100% my topic, but the idea that they're doing all this recruiting for these big police departments now by lowering standards, lowering physical standards, psychological standards, personal standards in order to get more black people in the department. This just happened. Did a big story on this yesterday in Milwaukee, and people were Sacramento, sorry. It's weird when you start dividing people up by race, the way people are having this country for the last 40 years, really nothing good happens.
Exactly. And check this out, Colin and Pete. I use Memphis PD we have a lot of listeners in Memphis, and I use the police department there as a prime example. Check this out. You got Memphis is a large city. It's predominantly black, number one. It has a black mayor, number two. A black police chief, number three, and it also has a predominantly black police department, number four. But yet it still has a black police union. Now, when does that ever become irrelevant or unnecessary? You see what I mean? It's never going to stop. It's just, and that causes division with the cops. And one other thing that people don't realize, I get a lot of people saying, why do white cops patrol black neighborhoods? Well, first of all, we're cops. We have to do that. Secondly, blacks don't even want to patrol their own neighborhoods. That happened in my department. They forced the white cops by federal mandate when having a special master to put all white cops in all the black neighborhoods because the blacks thought it was racist. And guess what? All the flack came on the white cops. It's like unbelievable. There's just no winning in this situation.
You know, my buddies in Chicago tell me when a black cop gets a little seniority, the very first thing they do is get the hell out of a black neighborhood, go to a white neighborhood, even if that means they go from working days to working nights. Nobody wants anything to do with this incessant criminality, this incessant hostility towards cops. Nobody wants a part of it, but that's part of the DNA of our big cities now.
Yeah, and I don't see it getting better. It's not going to get better. Pete and Colin, are you guys aware of the recent news in Pittsburgh with this Milano pizza place or something?
Yeah, I'm all over that.
You want to talk about what you think about that one, or is it not really news, really?
No. All these things are news because they're all tip of the iceberg. They all represent bigger stories. So when I looked at that story of a drunken black woman going into a small restaurant, and this, I guess he was kind of a, you know, Arabic or kind of a, immigrant owner of this restaurant, he stopped her and he said, "Listen, you're not a customer. Get the hell out of here." She wouldn't leave. She was defiant. It got physical. He attacked her. She attacked him. Now there's protests outside, saying, "Oh, you can't put your hands on a woman. Can't put your hands on a black woman." So everybody's protesting. But the thing is, anybody that's ever been in one of these small restaurants or small convenience stores, they know that the owner in a black neighborhood, they know that the owners and workers there are targets of constant black harassment, threats, violence, and robbery. Now, you know, the cops don't roll on these things. It's unusual. If you own a small convenience store in the ghetto, you call up and say, "Hey, somebody just walked out of here with $100 worth of stuff." They laugh at you. Nobody's going to roll on that. And so now we have this video of this guy getting into a fight with a guy who's on his property. She won't leave. She thinks she's entitled to be there, even though he doesn't want her there because she's creating a disturbance. Now this is like, what I call that is crime is the new black entitlement. Everybody's out there protesting because that woman was entitled to break the law inside of her restaurant solely because she's black, and that guy was not entitled to do anything to get her out.
You just hit the nail on the head. The problem is we're becoming so used to it that we're accepting things that are unacceptable. Now, this guy wasn't even a Caucasian guy. He was a Turkish guy, and he was fed up with whatever. Now, he had a right to kick her out. Now, I saw the video. He gave her a chance to leave. She was drunk. She actually swung at him, and he might have lost control. But this is what I think everybody feels now with the way they just make the quality of life. I mean, again, we're not speaking about all black people, but this is a black thing, and they have...
Jim, let me ask you a question. Why do you and I have to apologize for pointing out this crazy pattern? I promise you, you know this better than I do. When we turn on MSNBC, CNN, and they're telling us that black people are victims of white racism, are they apologizing to the good white people out there? Are they saying it's not all white people, just a couple? No. I don't do the apology thing when I'm pointing out this crazy pattern of black criminality, because not just the black criminals, it's about the black people who enable it through voting Democrat 93%.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're just getting warmed up.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C., and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the political cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Are you a native son or daughter of the South who bleeds the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. You're home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Hey!
We're back, and so are you. You're listening to Red 42 on Liberty News Radio.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back with Red 42 with our special guest, Kyle Flaherty. Sorry, Robert Plant, you got to take a back seat. Kyle, continue with your point. You were broken up for the commercial break about not apologizing for black crime.
No, that was pretty much it. You know, when all these things, Jim, we try to, when we find little things to talk about, we're really talking about big things. And so I'm not, wasn't picking on you. I was just saying, man, why do people who are victims, why are we the ones that have to apologize? You ever notice the criminals apologizing to us? No. They look at one of my favorite videos was the sister of the guy who just got shot for breaking into a house. She looked into the camera and said, well, you got to understand people from the neighborhood. Where was my brother going to get money for clothes if he didn't steal it? I don't expect people to believe that unless they actually see it on video.
I know. It's absolutely incredible. No, you're right. I have this habit of trying to put a little disclaimer out there to avoid the, you know, oh, you're just a racist thing. But you're right. It doesn't work. You're going to be called a racist regardless. And if my videos are all truth-based, and if I'm called a racist, then that's fine. Because honestly, no matter what, that's what they're going to do anyway, including white people will call you a racist. In fact, I've been called a racist more by white people than by blacks, actually. But yeah, I agree with what you said. I just usually throw that out but it's unnecessary because you're right. They don't do it. And the thing is, you know, getting back to this Pizza Milano thing, the only thing that's going to happen there is this business is going to go out of business and it's going to be another empty store in another black neighborhood. And now, you know, and it's just going to be part of the blight of black neighborhoods of the inner city. And that's what's going to happen. It's a typical pattern that we're seeing, you know?
You know, there's something else I thought was even more interesting than the Milano pizza in Pittsburgh. Last night on Philadelphia television, they did a story about for two nights in a row, there's been large-scale black mob violence on the subways in Philadelphia. And so they go to the head of the chief of police of the subway police, put a microphone in his face, and the lady goes, the black reporter says, well, is this an isolated thing? The cop, the chief goes, no, it's not isolated. This happens every day here. And I did a video where I reminded people of all these episodes of large-scale black mob violence on the subways and how determined reporters are up there, the same reporters who will report every tiny little case, every tiny little protest of Black Lives Matter will ignore this enormous pattern of black criminality and violence on the subways and lots of other places in Philadelphia. And so, you know, Jim, it's weird. The last month, there have been at least five to ten places where the mayor or a chief of police looks into the camera in a chocolate city or a chocolate school, and they say, crime is just out of control here now. We can't control it. Baltimore mayor goes, we're out of control. City council chief in Cleveland, just 2 weeks ago, crime's out of control. Last night on the TV, Channel 6 in Philly, crime's out of control on the subway. School principals, school district superintendents are saying the same thing. Yet if you look, turn on MSNBC, some of the liberals, some of the black guys on that channel, you'll hear that crime is down. And the fellas are not doing anything wrong. It's just people like Colin and Jim picking on them for no reason whatsoever. So we really have a real clash of reality here.
Yeah, that's the thing. They're not in reality, and they're going to paint the picture that they want. Crime could be handled by letting the cops do their job, and sometimes it's going to be a little rough. But that's how you got to deal with rough people. I mean, I'm the old school type of cop, and all cops agree with me. You know, there's just not much, you know, they're just getting so much flack today. But I still don't excuse the cops backing off because, see, Colin, back in my day, we never heard of depolicing or stand down. Cops never did that. We didn't do that back then. We did what we had to do, even though it was, no matter how ugly the neighborhood was, no matter how many citizens' complaints we got, we still did the job because that was what our job was. We had a little more pride in what we did. But like you said, the standards are lower. the type of guys they take on the job. They're just in it for a paycheck. You know, honestly, when I came on the job at 18, it was like the greatest thing for an Italian kid to do is to be a cop, you know, and my parents were so proud of me. And you know, it went a lot farther than, oh, well, I got a paycheck and some good health insurance, you know, but nobody cares anymore. And neither do the politicians, you know,
Jim, to me, the cop on the beat, they're still heroes. And the cops are still doing a great job. But I don't have to tell you this. They arrest them. They turn them over to the judges. And the judges, I mean, how do you get back on the street if you have 18 arrests by the time you're 20 years old? How does that happen?
Right.
It only happens one way. The judges look at the black criminals, and they decide that the black criminals are really victims. They're not really predators. So they let them go with a promise to be good and never do it again. So the cops...
Another thing you need to look at is the state attorney, district attorney, Commonwealth attorney. When I lived in New York, I lived in the Bronx. Eric Johnson was the district attorney for Bronx County, New York. This dude hated cops. There was a situation, Officer Vincent Cadiz of the 50th Precinct. He responded to a call, got in a fight with somebody, and some dirtbag, and he lost his life, and more or less the perp walked, and that's the mentality. And then when in 1998-99, when the four white cops from anti-crime came upon Amadou Diallo and shot at him because they thought he was a serious rape suspect, Johnson went all out. He charged him with murder one instead of manslaughter. But as we all know, they had to change the venue, of course. New York City was about to burn, but thank God for Rudy Giuliani, New York's finest. And the cops walked because they couldn't prove that the intent was murder. So that's what you get. You get out-of-control judges and out-of-control state attorneys.
You know, all over the country now, this is a new thing the last year or two. Let's just think of Chicago for Kim Fox. And in Philadelphia, they just elected a new district attorney as well. These attorneys, both of these guys are elected with over $1 million, George Soros, on special election funds. They're elected with the active and vocal support of Black Lives Matter. And their stated intent upon becoming district attorney is to show everybody that there are too many black people in prison for no reason whatsoever. Too many black people, they're very explicit, they're not hiding anything. Too many black people being arrested, too many black people going to jail, and it's all because of white racism, and we're not going to have that on my watch. This is Philadelphia, this is Chicago, it's St. Louis, it's Oakland, it's Corpus Christi, it's St. Louis, it's a lot of other places. And it's just astonishing the quality of the district attorney. It used to be just, you know, we could count on the DA to be kind of non-controversial, but, man, I think people are going to start figuring that out, too.
Right. Just look at Baltimore, Marilyn Mosby. What a joke she is. In fact, she went to Baltimore Police Department and said, hey, please go to this neighborhood and arrest a drug dealer. So what did they do? Went to that neighborhood, arrested a drug dealer, including Freddie Gray. And then she made an absolute spectacle over the death of Freddie Gray, charging those six cops. And you get this, her and her husband, who is a councilman for Baltimore City, were special MCs or ringmasters for the Universe Soul Circus, which is for not white people. So there you go, Baltimore City.
It's incredible. You know, like you guys were saying, the legal system has become very anti-white and anti-police now, and it's very antagonistic against cops. A lot of these, even let's use Chicago, a lot of the gun cases, a lot of these guys are walking. I mean, they have the strictest gun laws there, but a lot of these guys are caught with illegal guns. They're not even doing time for some of these gun charges. You know, a lot of people don't realize that. They're throwing these cases out. But
okay, I'll give you a specific example. About 2 months ago, the cop sent me this police report. A guy, a known gang member, a guy with a long criminal record of violence and gun crime, he's sitting in a car. Stop the car. They find a gun in the glove compartment in front of this dude within his arm's reach, within his control. They literally wrote on the charging documents, he said the gun wasn't his, so we're not going to charge him with it.
That's crazy. That's crazy right there. That's just crazy. That's why these guys are walking with these things. And so it's it's this cops got to realize that, you know, like I said, you guys might not be so critical on cops. Sometimes I am, because I realized this. I was a good cop. I put my life on the line so many times, even when I didn't have to. And a good cop doesn't like a guy that just backs off or doesn't do anything just because there's a risk. We got to take that risk. There's no backing off. There's no deep policing. But I understand what's going on, though, and the reasons behind it, you know.
All right, Jim, Colin, we're headed to our final break. This is Red 42 on Liberty News Radio. Contact us at red42radio@gmail.com.
Getting advice from a teenager is a little unusual, but please listen to me. If you find yourself pregnant and you're scared, I've got some advice because I've been there. My boyfriend wasn't ready to be a father, and frankly, he wasn't all that interested after I told him I was pregnant. My friends told me I should keep the baby because it would be fun. Well, having a baby is about the baby. It's not about whether I have fun. Some people told me my parents would help take care of the baby, but my baby still wouldn't have both a mom and a dad of her own. And that's really important to me. After putting my feelings aside, I made the best decision I could for my baby. Not because I felt it was easy, but because I felt it was right.
Adoption. It's about love.
I didn't give my baby up. I gave her more.
A message from LDS Family Services.
The word vigor is defined in the dictionary as health and strength in body and mind. Do you have enough health and strength in body and mind? Would you like to pursue life with passion? Would you like to know where you stand when it comes to your vigor score? That's right. There's a free scientific test you could take now that'll help you find out what your vigor score is. Then you can do things to improve that score. Did you know that? It's absolutely free, F-R-E-E free. All you got to do is get a hold of Kurt Crosby. You can do so, C-U-R-T. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. Or call Kurt at 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Would you like to learn about the scientifically proven vigor test? It's free. How would you like to improve your vigor score? Again, inexpensive solutions are available now. Call Kurt Crosby at 801-669-2211. Or Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor score test today.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Once again, here's the potato and the pasta. Opie and Anthony. Here's Jim and Scoop.
Okay, thank you, James Edwards. We're back to Red 42. Before we continue, let's do some housekeeping real quick. The website is red42.org, or you can go to Colin Flattery, F-L-A-H-E-R-T-Y.com. Go to minds.com for check out Colin's videos. Our email address is red42radio@gmail.com. Also, special thanks to Wildgale Automotive in Herndon, Virginia. They did it right by me. I had an issue with a tire. They didn't sell me a tire, fixed it for free, and sent me on my way. Again, let's get back to down to brass tacks. Colin, you want to plug anything else. You got some good books out there. You got some great videos, a great website. You want to promote those?
You know what I found? I found I'm on the show talking about stuff like this in a plain fashion. I don't have to plug anything. People, when they're done listening, they go, who the hell was that guy? You can't stop people from finding out who people are talking about this kind of stuff. See, I got books, I got podcasts, I got all this stuff. Easy to find. If you want to, I just think there's a lot. When I started this whole thing out about writing about racial violence, black criminality so wildly out of proportion, I thought it was a media story. I thought it was a story about how reporters and are in denial, deceit, and delusion about it. It is. But then my readers and viewers morphed it into a personal safety story as well. People that have family members that live in black neighborhoods, that live in chocolate cities, they're targets, they're a danger, they're at risk. So really, now it's a question of we're saving lives by telling people this. You know, our friends, people we hang around with, when they see a little spark of white racism inside themselves, they're dialing 911, the fire hose is coming to put it out. You turn on MSNBC, CNN, or you listen to black politicians, they're not having this discussion. No, the discussion they're having is, how much do white people suck? How much do Asian people suck? How bad are they? How deserving are they of this criminality we inflict upon them? So there's a lot of danger out there. People get themselves in dangerous situations. I document this all the time. They're not really aware of. You guys probably know that only about 1 million times better than I do.
Well, you're right, Colin. It's becoming too commonplace, even in the mainstream, on TV and everything, where politicians, everybody else are actually saying, oh, white people deserve what they're getting, basically. In so many words, in their own way, they're saying it. It's absolutely incredible. How about Bernie Sanders when he was running for president? He said a white person doesn't understand what poverty is. He said that in a debate. It's absolutely crazy for a politician
president. He and Hillary were on that. He and Hillary were on that every day.
Yeah, it's incredible that someone could actually say that. The problem is, and you know this very well, there's fallout from that. Then these blacks start taking it out on old granny walking down the street because she's an easy target. Just like your book, you point out all this horrendous animalistic knockout game where people, young black males, are beating the crap out of old women going to church or going shopping. It's absolutely incredible that didn't make much more national news.
Hey, last night, Boynton Beach, Florida. The little ladies at a movie theater. 20 black people are rampaging through the movie theater. They beat the hell out of her. You see a picture of her, all bruised, battered. I mean, old white women are such targets in this country. They're targets of black, you know, and very, very few academic studies on it. But the ones that the one that was done says, oh yeah, we talked to everybody that involved in this violence against old women. Old white, old Asian women, it's all about black rage. So wildly out of proportion. And I just don't know how long people are going to be able to stay in denial about this. It's getting worse. No matter what you hear on MSNBC. You know, it's funny, the people who say it's not bad, I mean, it's like, hey, don't tell Jim, don't tell Colin. Go down to the hood, tell them. Walk down to the hood. Spread your word of racial harmony down there. Take a nice expensive camera with you. Tell me what happens. Let us know how that works out.
Exactly. People like I'm sorry, Pete. I just wanted to get this point out. People like me and you are exposing it. It is saving people's lives. But when it's hidden, it's actually getting people hurt. It's getting people killed. And why there's no outrage. See, I didn't hear about that old woman down in Florida, but this is a commonplace thing. I mean, I've actually saved old women's lives. I actually been on a call where I pulled a black guy with a gun out from some old white lady's underneath her bed. He was going to kill her. And we were lucky to find him under there. I mean, this is a commonplace thing, but it's uncommon to people that are unaware of this stuff because they're not getting it from the news. Pete, did you have to say something?
Yeah, to piggyback what Colin said, these reporters from CNN, MSNBC, Washington Post, AP writers, they don't go to these hoods. They don't take the subway going through these neighborhoods. They stay clear of 110th Street. They don't go to Bridgeport. They don't take the Green Line in D.C. They don't go to West Baltimore. You know, they went to, when Baltimore burned, they're all in downtown Baltimore because there was a fortress. Yours truly went to West Baltimore right after the fires, and guess what? I didn't see any cops, and I couldn't tell it was burned that week. It was burned back in the 60s. So, you know, it's just a big lie. So,
Colin, you got
Colin, we got.
Say that again, Jim.
No, I was just going to say, you have anything to say about that? I mean, this is, go ahead. It's all about not telling, not letting the information out.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Like, you know, it's funny. I've done lots of stories about reporters, including two this month, reporters and other people down with the cause becoming victims of black mob violence. The TV crew in Cleveland was attacked. In the San Francisco Bay Area, they've had dozens of attacks. Black people attacking news crews when they go into the ghetto in Richmond or Berkeley or Oakland, and they're carrying armed guards with them. And so, but that does, you would think that once you get that dose of reality, that would change their point of view. But no, what's happening is the denial, deceit, delusion is so great, it doesn't change them at all. If anything, they double down on spreading this fairy tale of black victimization. You know, in New York, in Washington, the same thing happened. Big NPR reporter, her husband got almost killed on the subway. Didn't affect NPR's coverage whatsoever. They're still all about black victimization on NPR and white racism. That's the greatest lie of our generation. That's why us three are having this conversation right now.
Yeah, the black victimization thing is absolutely ludicrous. I mean, if anybody's victimizing anybody, it's the blacks are victimizing everybody. And that's a fact. And here's another example that everybody's aware of. There's an average of 30,000 black-on-white rapes and sexual assaults reported every year, and 0% white-on-black. Yet, when the Duke lacrosse team gets falsely accused of raping a black woman, it makes national news nonstop until they were exonerated. It's amazing, isn't it? But all the gang raping, and how about the Chicago one where the stupid cops let that white girl out, that mentally challenged white girl out in the streets, and she got raped by seven blacks and thrown out of a seventh floor window. Nobody hears about that. It's unbelievable, you know?
Yeah, and the big importance of that last story you mentioned was that her parents sued the city of Chicago. They brought in a sociologist from Harvard, and he said, listen, if you release a white woman into a black neighborhood, you can routinely expect a white person to be the victim of horrific violence in a black neighborhood. That's what you should have known. You did know it. You ignored it. That's why she was almost killed. That's why the city of Chicago had to pay out the largest judgment in its history, $22 million. It's called routine activity theory. White person, black neighborhood, you can routinely expect violence. That when the judge said that, when the sociologist said that, the judge said, you could have taken her down to the zoo and put her in a lion's cage. She would have been safer. The reporters in Chicago, their minds were exploding because they couldn't ignore this story, but they had to figure out a way to report it without really saying that. And it was quite a challenge to them.
Yeah, they were more upset about the insinuation that the neighborhoods were so dangerous for a white woman to walk in than the actual atrocity itself. And that's what really bothers me. The cops should have known better. They were wrong there. What's that?
It wasn't really the cops. It was the people. Well, I guess it was cops. It was the people working in the in the jail. So it wasn't the beat cops. It was the black people, by the way, who were in the jail system. You know, all the stuff we're talking about. Question: how easy would any of this stuff be to disprove? I say black neighborhoods are dangerous for white people. How easy is that to disprove? You could show me now. If you don't agree with that, get in your car, walk down to a black neighborhood, walk around, tell the fellas that you don't agree with Colin that white person's in danger in a black neighborhood. Let me know how that works out.
Absolutely right. Yep.
Okay, that's all the time we have this week for Red 42. I'd like to thank Colin Flattery for spending the entire hour with myself and Jim Lancia. This is Scoop Stanton signing off. Go to red42.org. Email us at red42radio@gmail.com. Also sponsor us. We need some sponsors or we're going to go off the air. Have a good one, everybody.
This is James Edwards for Red 42 Radio, reminding those patrolling the streets and the jails to be careful, be safe, take care of each other, and come home at the end of the night. So long, everybody.